Memories can be tricky things. They really can. Our minds can do really creepily amazing things. Memories can be altered. Yes. Yes, they can. It's not always the most accurate form of recall by any means. This is proven. Our minds are literally rebuilding situations and then telling us this is what happened. Now, in many cases, it is completely accurate, but in other cases, it's not. It just isn't. And in some cases, if you have the event that you're recalling on video or documented in some way, shape, or form, you can understand and see, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that my mind was recalling it this way. It's proven this is how it went. It's always an interesting thing and a difficult thing when we're talking about the paranormal and recalling paranormal experiences, especially from childhood. It's very easy to write that off as, oh, it's how I'm recalling it. It was probably just this or that, but my mind has been telling me this forever, that it was something paranormal, when in fact, maybe it wasn't. Or was it? That's the interesting thing. In many cases, I firmly believe that recounting paranormal activities from childhood, it's not your memory failing you or recalling something inaccurately. It's accurate. It's just our adult brain sometimes trying to find more reason than we ever had as a child and trying to put those pieces together. Today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we hear several stories about people looking back on their memories, on their past experiences with the paranormal. We're going to hear about a young woman growing up in a toxic home environment who's tormented by both the living and the dead. Also, when house sitting, one person learns very quickly that the strange noises and events in the house that she's responsible for are not just the wind. Plus, a young woman struggles to identify what her childhood paranormal experiences were. Meaning, were they actually paranormal? Or were they part of her illness? Was it a combination? Trying to recall these things leads to a lot of confusion. These stories today on EPP bonus episode number 287 of Real Ghost Stories Online. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Let me talk to you for just a minute, my past. You've done something to me. You've earned me my past. And it's gone on for far too long, my past. It's time now to put you to rest.
Living in a toxic environment is really kind of a recipe for disaster, not only mentally and emotionally, but also for bringing in forces that may continue to wreak havoc even more. If your volume is already at a 10 with what the living are doing, that's very likely going to be able to be turned up to a 12 or a 13 or higher with a little added help from something on the other side that just feeds off of all of that negative energy. Maybe you've been in one of those situations. Maybe it was your childhood. Maybe it was sometime after that. Maybe it was just for a short period of time. Maybe it was a way of life. Maybe it still is life. In our next story, we hear about a family that is in a perpetual toxic situation. A mother and a daughter, and the mother's boyfriend, and things not going very well, bad choices being made, just horrible people involved in the situation. Not everybody in the story horrible, but some in the story pretty horrible. And a daughter that is discovering her sensitivity to the other side, and she sees it full on. Thanks to the hectic, chaotic, and very toxic environment that she's being brought up in. Take a listen. It started when I was 6 years old, but I didn't know what was going on at the time. My mother was a very strict and sometimes physically abusive individual, but I did not fall in line like a soldier. When she called my name, she expected me to answer within seconds. I started to hear my name a lot. It was always a woman's voice calling, "Katie." I would answer by yelling back, "What?" She never answered. So I'd have to walk all the way down the stairs and around the house until I found my mother to find out what it is she wanted. She'd often tell me she hadn't called me, and as a child, I never questioned it. I went back to playing by myself. Sure, maybe you can try and brush this off as an abused child's anxiety. We moved from that home a few years later into a duplex where the owner lived on one side and rented out the other. I was always an independent child, so it was odd, but I refused to sleep in my bed the 6 months we lived there. When I would try, I'd always had to put headphones on with music playing in order to sleep. My mother would ask why I didn't want to sleep in my room. I always told her, because something doesn't want me to sleep in my room. I didn't think anything of it. I was a child. I felt how I felt, and I never lingered on it. I do remember, though, my mother always complaining of smelling cigarette smoke when we came home. I never smelled it. But the neighbor who owned the building was a smoker, and my mother was convinced he was going through our house when we were away. The most significant thing I remember about my room was the bay view. I always remember feeling like something was sitting in it. But again, I didn't understand why I was feeling this way. Conversations about ghosts were not a topic of common choice, nor were they the many shows that there are on television today to make the topic more acceptable. Things settled down as we moved into a new home and continued to move from year to year. Finally, when I was in my eighth grade year of school at the age of 13 and the height of the verbal, emotional, and physical abuse I received from my mother, things really started to take off. My mother had a boyfriend who had moved in, and well, the guy was disgusting. I'd often walk out in the evenings to get a glass of water and catch him quickly changing the HBO channel to something else. I knew exactly what he was watching. I'm sure you can figure it out too. He began coming into my mother's office at night while I was on my computer. He'd start pressing his pelvis into the back of my chair and rubbing on me in completely inappropriate ways. I'd sit there and take it, boiling inside and completely disgusted. I just wanted him to go away. To this day, the idea of him touching me still makes my skin crawl. I feared my mother, and that fear kept me from speaking up. The only friend I had was a small black and white kitty, and I wasn't willing to lose her by telling my dad, who had divorced my mother when I was 3 years old. I felt stuck and hopeless. Stan was this pervert's name, and he was a part-time musician. He was a smooth operator, and she's the type of woman that would put the desires of her love interest before anything her children needed at the drop of a hat. Somehow he had convinced my mother to purchase a baby grand piano, and from one day to the next, there was an oak baby grand piano sitting in our dining room. The piano had been refurbished from an estate sale and was over 100 years old. The first night that piano was in the house, I'll never forget. I didn't get any weird vibes or odd feelings from it, just a regular piano. However, at almost exactly 11 p.m., while the whole house slept, I walked past this piano to get a drink of water. As I returned by it to walk down the short hallway to my room, the first key struck loud, booming, and deep at the lowest end of the keyboard, and I froze. I sat there, completely still, as the next key played, a high note that echoed through the vaulted ceilings. I slowly began to process what was happening and started to turn around. Peering at the keyboard, I saw as the last note was struck. A middle note firmly pressed and quickly released as the key flickered to a still position. It was at this moment I knew something wasn't right. I tore down the hallway, feeling something following me, and I began pounding on my mother's bedroom door, terrified. I tried to explain to her what I had just seen, but she blew me off, telling me the cat must have done it. There was no cat on the piano. I know what I saw. No cat could possibly have hit those notes in the way that they had just been played. I slipped into my room and locked the door. That was the first time I ever remembered the feeling of being watched. Things continued to escalate. I woke up one time to someone pounding on my window, thinking it had been the mischievous neighborhood twins. I yanked open the curtain and yelled at them, but I never saw them run off. Another time this happened was in broad daylight. It was about 10 a.m. on a summer weekday, so everyone was gone except me and the cat. I walked out into the living room, and the huge window next to the piano began to rattle like someone was pounding on it. I slowly approached the window, looking down at the brushes to see if the twins were there. However, no one was present. I remember looking around at this window and slowly placing my fingers to the glass. I could feel the vibration, and then suddenly, it stopped. I quickly turned to look at my cat, who was lingering at the entrance of the hallway, and the cat was looking behind her, not towards the noise we had both just heard. I went to the kitchen shortly after, having no idea how to process what had just happened. I pulled out a bowl for cereal, went to the pantry and poured the cereal, then put the box back and went to the fridge. As I bent down to reach in for the milk, something shiny glimmered, and suddenly I was startled by the sound of something metal clanging against the countertop. I remember clutching the milk as I walked over to my cereal bowl, only to find a spoon on the counter next to my bowl of cereal. I didn't know what else to do. I poured my milk, grabbed the spoon, quickly said thank you, and ran off. It didn't end there, though. I started to become paranoid as I was waking up with bruises on my arms and thighs. They were always in sets of four small circles, with a fifth circle on the opposite side, like fingertips. I started to take one of Stan's empty beer bottles and place it behind my bedroom door upside down. The thought was, if he was sneaking in my room, the bottle would fall over onto the porcelain tile floor and make enough noise to wake me. Well, the bottle never fell. There were even times I woke up feeling like I'd been raped. Eventually, I told my teacher about Stan always inappropriately touching me while I was on my computer, although I would like to be clear, he never raped me. She called Child Protective Services, and that night I got the beating of a lifetime. My mother is also a drunk, and that night was no exception, as her boyfriend had just been removed from the home on sexual abuse accusations, to which my mother blamed me. I'll never forget the words she said to me that night. You think you're better than me. You think you're prettier than me. You think someone would actually want you over me? She slammed me into the wall that night and chased me down the hallway, where I tried to run away from her. She pushed her way through my bedroom door and slammed the base of the cordless phone into my porcelain dolls. She started coming after me again, and that was the first time I ever hit her back. I took the battery end of the cordless phone that she had just thrown and swung it like a baseball bat into her face. That was the last time she ever hit me. I was now a junior in high school. That night, though, I stayed up till midnight finishing my homework. My mother, long passed out in her room from her alcohol consumption, or so I thought, was the night she finally admitted something was going on. She came barreling out of her room into the kitchen and another triad yelling, "You did it! You brought it here!" I remember looking at her like she was crazy. "What? What are you talking about? What did I bring here?" That was when she began to tell me she had woken up to something shoving her in the shoulder, telling her to get out. That night as I went to my room, I opened the door, and on the wall over my bed was a silhouette of a little boy. I kept trying to rationalize what was going on and what threw all my stuffed animals off my bed, thinking maybe it was a shadow cast from those. That wraps up the preview portion of this week's EPP bonus episode. To find out what happens, become an extra podcast person. That's an EPP. Through our website at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. You'll get access to the rest of this episode, as well as access to 287 bonus episodes in their entirety. All of them. For only $5 a month. Plus, you get access to our regular episodes before they're released to the public in advance, and they're commercial free. So you can binge away on all of that ad free, which is quite nice. Plus, other bonuses throughout the year as well. It's only $5 a month to become an extra podcast person. That's what primarily supports our show and keeps it on the air. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories.
So, almost done. To wake up. Oh.
is clear.